At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Cannondale's new Treadwell bike is the ultimate easygoing, easy riding bike for any day and anywhere.
You sound pretty easygoing.
Thanks, Jesse.
And easy riding.
You know what? You give me copy, I'm happy to read it. I don't care what it's about.
It's light, comfortable, and even connects effortlessly to your smartphone via the free Cannondale app to track your ride data, let you know when it's time for a tune-up, and more.
To experience the Treadwell, visit your local Cannondale retailer and try one for yourself.
To enter to win a new Treadwell, see the official rules at cannondale.com/Conan.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello, welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
You're Jesse Gaskell. I'm Mike Sweeney, and we work here at The Conan Show. We're writers here on the show, and
we know everything about the show.
We know everything, and we've only divulged 4% of it so far. We'd love to talk about stuff going on here. And
yeah, there's been a lot going on here.
Yeah.
Because we just got back from Ghana.
2 days ago.
And we were there with Conan, I should clarify.
He's doing a travel show, a Conan Without Borders, and we spent 6 days there. And we also went with Sam Richardson, one of the stars of Veep and Detroiters, and the Tim Robinson sketch show.
Just a really hilarious guy.
Really funny.
Who has family in Ghana.
Yes.
He lived there for a while.
His mother's whole side of the family, his mom grew up there. And so we got
to meet
hang
them
out.
All.
Yeah.
They cooked dinner for us.
They did. It was a unique experience. It was really fun.
It was, I mean, I think this, I don't want to jinx it, but I think that show's going to be really great.
Well, I think that was the classic definition of a jinx. So which is it? Jinx, not jinx. Oh, leave it in and we'll jinx it, jinx away.
We shot some great stuff.
Yeah. We shot a lot of stuff and it was
it's really ours to ruin at this point.
It is. We're going to botch it in the edit room. Sorry.
But we had promised that we were going to record an episode while we were there.
We said that before we left.
I don't know if we promised. We just teased it.
Yeah. And we didn't.
We didn't do it.
We're shooting video all day. There's no time for podcast tomfoolery.
No, there wasn't time at all. And if we had tried to approach Conan about recording, he probably would have
murdered
swatted us away. We were running on empty and we were not, we were blowing through lunches. I mean,
we were eating chicken in a van while zipping to
at
the
4
next
p.m. Yeah.
shoot. So yeah, podcasting didn't quite fit. That'd be like saying, we'd like to stop to get our nails done. You know, it kind of would seem like that.
And then we were in the Heathrow Airport on the way back, and briefly, we were presented with an opportunity.
Aaron Blair said, "Do you want
to podcast?"
Do it now?
And we both hid. I believe.
Yeah, we did kind of hide in different parts of the airport. Well, the key is not to be together because then the equipment could pop out. So we kept, one of us was always MIA, and it worked. We didn't have to do it.
Kept trading trips to the bathroom. Yeah, so we didn't do anything there. I'm sure closer to when this show airs, we'll get to talk about it more with you all. But
what's that? Oh, our time's up. Sorry. Sorry, guest.
No, we actually do. We didn't totally fail you because we have a great guest this week.
Really great guest. Oh my God, I'm very excited. We've been trying to book him for a while.
And yeah.
A 9:30 a.m. slot opened up. And so we finally get to chat with the great Matt Walsh.
Matt Walsh of Upright Citizens Brigade, founder fame.
Founder fame. And now, of course, everyone got to really enjoy him on Veep.
Yes. He's just one of the best improvisers ever.
Yes. And a great, great guy. And
he also was on Late Night with COB.
Yes. That's one reason he's here today is because when UCB came to New York in 96, those guys appeared on Late Night all the time in pre-tapes and in sketches because they were friends with some Chicago writers, Andy Richter, Brian McCann, Brian Stack, and all the writers used them in sketches all the time. And
They were really part of the troupe.
They really were.
And we just want to warn you in advance. We start this conversation talking about Austria.
Yes.
And then
in the middle of a discussion about traveling and
Austria, which wasn't really part of the interview, but then we didn't want to stop because it was funny. No. And then later we try ham-fistedly to work in a way that would seamlessly transition later, but we ended up deciding not to edit it. So you'll just hear it all in its weird uncut glory.
Yes. Sorry. So yes.
Uncut glory is also a good
We decide,
name for a gay bar.
We decided from now on to... That is a great... let's get out of this and start investing in gay bars. It is Gay Pride Month.
That's true.
Uncut glory.
So anyway, here's Matt Walsh in his uncut glory.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was the whole purpose. I met some Belgian dude when I was traveling about in Europe many moons ago, and he was telling me about his plan. I'm like, I would do that.
Yeah.
So we crossed at Gibraltar and then took the train through Marrakesh, and then you see all the Berber, you know, like on the Folgers coffee crystals, those gentlemen. Yeah. You see the nomadic Berbers throughout the mountains.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
This was a long time
ago. Long time ago, 1989.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. 30 years ago.
Yeah. Before it was cool. Before it was on Instagram.
Yeah. A period of discovery for you.
Yes, it was. It was a walkabout for myself.
Yeah. With a Belgian
4 months. No, that was just one dude I met. I literally traveled from Scandinavia through... I actually went to school in Austria for a year. So I went back to Austria, visited my family there, and then went... My host family. And then did everything, you know. Went
to Eastern Europe. Were you in college?
No, I was post-college. I was trying to figure out, I worked on a psych ward and I was taking classes to be a psychologist and I was very unhappy and I was also doing comedy at night and I was at a crossroads.
No wonder you were unhappy.
Yeah, the comedy was making me unhappy. Right.
Cranky. A little cranky. Wait, so are you still in touch with the host family?
You know, I'm not. I could probably... I know their address in my head. 5020 Georg von Nissenstrasse.
Is that
Salzburg,
true?
Austria.
Oh my God.
Have they
maybe they're listening to this podcast.
They'll reach out to you.
Alex and Stale had nicked the sisters. It was like three sisters. Stutzi, Wootsi.
Stutzi and Wootsi.
And Kutzi.
And Kutzi.
No. But I'm not kidding. Their real names were Alexandra, Beatrice, and the sister lived in Vienna. I forget her name. She was Stutzi.
I love the way you say Stutzi.
Stutzi.
So you weren't in Vienna.
I lived in Salzburg.
Okay.
Which is a beautiful, idyllic,
Sound
of Music looking city.
Yeah.
Right.
Birthplace city. And I lived there for a year. And every weekend we would go, you know, to Paris. We would go to Italy.
Oh, yeah.
We would go to Poland. We would go to Amsterdam.
Wow.
It was great. It was very Central Europe. So you could get out and go.
You almost sighed when you said all those cities. Like, oh, you know, we had to go to Paris. And
I'm grateful for it.
No, it sounds
great. I don't want to bore you with like...
No.
It's the white person's pilgrimage.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is because you're seeing the great Western civilization, art museums. Every city has like the picture that you knew growing up.
Right.
And so you go to... Like Munich had a bunch of Bruegel stuff. I liked Bruegel.
The elder.
Yeah.
Not the younger. The younger
the elder?
Is a knockoff artist.
Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. Uh-huh. Vienna had a bunch of like fin de siècle, like Otto Klimt, a lot of Klimt
in Vienna. In Vienna. They have a whole Klimt museum.
There you go.
And more Bruegels.
And Bruegels.
There are a lot of Bruegels in
the Bruegels are better in America. New York City has the best Bruegels.
New York City has one Bruegel.
It's the water, yeah.
It's the water.
No, New York City has one Bruegel. It's the summer harvest, yeah, oh. In the Met.
I knew you would know this stuff. That's why I'm like,
I love Bruegels.
Getting there. Yeah.
We always do this,
what people
Sweeney,
want to hear.
We have to introduce the person we're talking to.
Right. But we'll look, it's up to Kevin, our producer, to take this chunk and put it,
later.
Drop it down in the middle of our Vienna chat. And then it's seamless. We didn't even get to that. Don't you want to know what he was studying over there?
Yeah.
I studied generally like art history and Western civilization.
Well, that makes sense. Wow.
And then I had German, so I took basically 3 semesters of German and 2 semesters, you know, intensive and then one other introductory class. And then for a month, I didn't live, but I traveled around Turkey with my roommate who was from Japan. And Turkey was just unbelievable. That's one of the most fascinating places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so many changeovers of...
Changeovers and like you stumble into like these ruins, like in Rome.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They built a 7-Eleven, you know, over a 2,000-year-old bathhouse. Right. Mm-hmm. Turkey's even better than that.
You go into the restroom in the Rome 7-Eleven.
Yeah. You're just
like, wait a minute.
That's real?
Vomitorium, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So Turkey had like the Temple of Artemis and Ephesus, that old city.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I went to Ephesus.
Yeah, exactly.
I watched a guy, an American guy wearing a backpack, tried to squeeze in between 2 columns, and he knocked a column over.
No!
And it shattered.
No!
I mean, that's a 12,000-year-old city, and I watched, and I was just staring, and my mouth was agape, and he kind of looked around like, nobody saw that, right? And walked away. And I was just like...
Hey, you.
It's broken forever.
Clean up marble walkway.
I know.
Right, exactly.
Clean up on the marble walkway. Like, it lasted 12,000 years, and then this one guy.
Well, plus they stand those up. Like, I'm sure that wasn't, they found it, stacked it, mortared it or something.
Maybe it looked beautiful until people started wearing backpacks, and then it turned into a ruin.
Yeah, that's why it's a ruin. Yeah. That's true.
Because they love
that. Exactly, yeah. Always deadly.
Wow. Stonehenge suffers from the same
problem. Yeah.
That's Rolly suitcases. Knock those over. That's fascinating. I love that.
I know. You're very well traveled.
Very well traveled.
I have been fortunate, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to I've never been to Ghana.
Yeah.
I'm envious of you all.
Well, you should be.
I hadn't been to Ghana until I had.
Do you look forward to traveling with your kids? I know your children are on the young side.
We have traveled. They've been to Bruegels. New York. They've never seen a Bruegel, but we did a summer in France 2 years ago.
Oh,
I got to do a movie in France. Ooh. So we did
you should
Paris.
Only take movies in France.
Exactly. I asked them if I could take my family. And they were like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'll do this, whatever it is.
I'm going to guess you loved having your family there, but is it a little tense when you're working every day?
It's probably worse for my wife, Morgan, because like she's got to figure out what they're going to do for the day. Like I go off to work and, you know, I'm pretty structured and taken care of. Like she's got to fend for herself. And like we landed in Bordeaux and had like the worst bug-infested Airbnb you could possibly imagine. And then the people... were rude, and they said, this is the first time we ran into Americans, and of course we're having a problem.
Oh,
so
no.
They got really hostile, so Morgan had to, like, document, because it was the kind of place where you move in, and all the drawers were full with everything. Like, there was no dressers, and they hadn't cleaned up.
There was stuff
everywhere.
Yeah.
They had the mom and the daughter had just vacated.
Well, they left because there were bed bugs.
Exactly. And then the daughter came back in the middle of our stay because she had to get some stuff out of her room, and we're like, sure.
Oh,
it was just very like
informal
and terrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we ended up getting a much better. But for example, Morgan had to do all that stuff because I was working. So it's a lot harder on mom. But the kids, and she loved it. She did, ultimately.
And the kids just see you staring at a script. It's like, what's he doing? Children. Someday you'll understand.
Well, you bring them a set and they're not interested. That's the truth. They'll hit the craft service table and then that's about it.
Yeah.
We filmed in like a beautiful vineyard called Chateau Beauregard for like a month.
Ah. Mm.
But that's not really stimulating to a kid.
Right.
Like a grown up, it would be interesting to see the process and the machinery and talk about it.
Sure, of course. Have samples.
Very boring to kids. Vineyards are very intrinsically boring to children.
They are.
Yes. Yeah.
They're plants. It just looks like work.
This is a 100-year-old rootstock. Okay.
Right.
Okay. What's next?
They plant roses at the end of each row. Because, did you ever hear that?
No. Is that true? Grapes?
What does it do?
Because if the rose gets a disease, the rose has it's very similar to the grapevines. So the rose is almost like a canary in the coal mine. If the rose gets in trouble,
you'll see it.
Everyone's on alert to check out for some sort of fungus or something. I think your kids would have enjoyed that aspect. I wish I had been there with them in France.
I got to believe that story wouldn't have made them that much more interested.
I don't think so. With my Bruegel insights?
No, still not interested. I'm going to be a kid now. Tell me that story.
I just did.
Oh, I'm not interested, you're still Mr. Sweeney. That's boring, Mr. Sweeney. Where's my iPad?
Well, perhaps this wine will help.
Dad says I can't drink that.
Just a sip.
Your dad doesn't seem very present in your life. He's off shooting movies all day. Uncle Michael.
That's true. He just looks at his papers
exactly,
when he comes
home. Papers.
And Mom resents having to move Airbnbs.
Ruminates about his days in Turkey. We're never going to introduce
Matt Walsh.
We're very excited here to talk to the one
guest.
And only. Oh, my God. It's Matt Walsh.
It's Matt Walsh.
Hi, everyone.
Who I've been in love with for years, and I've never...
Friend of the show.
Old friend of the show.
From late night days. Yeah, from old late night days.
Mm-hmm. Old late night days.
On the ninth floor? Is that what you were
at? It was the ninth floor is where the offices were.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been painting a good picture of that time period.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Trying to make it sound positive.
No, it sounds like it was very renegade in a lot of ways. There was a lot of...
Yeah.
Running,
I was just
shooting.
Talking to my buddy, Michael Delaney, who's also an old school pal.
I love Michael Delaney.
We were reliving some Halloween sketch that I got to do with you where I played we were both doctors, and I think Oldie Olderson might have been Frankenstein.
Oh. Oldie Olson. Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
But that was just literally last night talking about an old Conan sketch.
Right.
And oh, that's great.
Regaling. Because when I landed in New York, Conan's... You know, under 5 days, getting a job at Conan paid my rent. So it was very important that our friends at Conan were keeping us busy. It was really
good.
Was
that how you got to join SAG?
No, I was I was already in SAG in Chicago for a True Value Hardware commercial in 1994.
You're still getting residuals.
Do you have a copy of that ad somewhere?
I did. I probably had it on VHS somewhere, which is probably in a trunk somewhere.
So that was your first official acting gig?
That was my first paid.
Were you a customer or an employee?
I was a True Value guy, and I had an answer for everything. It was sort of the attitude
of it. You still look like a True Value guy.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I go to you for hardware questions to this day.
You look like you know what
to my house after hours.
I drop way around a valve.
Through my window. You'll just stand there looking through my bedroom window, and I'll wake up. And your excuse is you had a hardware question.
I did. It was about the metric Allen wrench, which I don't have. I have
the US
standard.
Email could have covered that, and I could have gotten back to you in the morning.
Yeah, but I just thought seeing
the dogs are
personally
barking because you look like a stalker. Sort of.
Right. And the great thing is you have aisles in your house, so it really
I do have,
it matches
I do have
up
stock.
Perfectly.
I do have stock.
And they're all labeled, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm really curious because I was there, I think, when you guys moved – the UCB, the original UCB, right? Moved to New York and started appearing on the show. But I don't know the mechanics. I mean, I know you guys were all friends with Andy and McCann.
Exactly. And I don't know if Stack was there yet. There was a real
Stack
Chicago connection to your show.
96. Big Chicago connection.
And so Dino, I kind of already knew Dino
All right.
at the time. So Dino would have been walking around some version of that writer Stack.
Right.
So those people. And then... Yeah, in Rockefeller itself, like upstairs, like I think McKay was there already, and McKay and Tom Giannis, and you know, there were some other Chicago guys upstairs at SNL. So there was friends in town,
and
like Andy I've known forever.
Steve Jobs' garage of comedy.
Right.
What great thing did we create? What was our iPod, I guess?
That's for historians.
The Wussy Wagon? Was the Wussy Wagon our iPod?
Were you in the Wussy Wagon?
Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
All right. I just wanted to bait you. Oh, and Stephen
Colbert.
And Tommy
Blotcha was another early writer.
Tommy Blotcha.
Yeah. Colbert.
On Exit 57.
Yeah, Colbert was doing Exit 57. He's another Chicago guy who, I think, threw me a job when I landed. He was very nice.
Yes. Before he turned.
Before he turned and host a show.
Right, right. So maybe you've talked about this a million times, but how did you guys decide as a group to
do it in a better way? If we're going to do the same conversation, yeah. I challenge you to do it in a better way.
Okay.
Like for a New Yorker reader. I want a New Yorker reader conversation.
Well, to do it better, wouldn't I have to have knowledge of the other times you've talked about it, which I have
not. Use your gut. Ask the questions that nobody's asked me, but still covering the same subject matter.
Okay.
Go.
Why New York?
Both of you. Both of you.
Why New York and not Michigan? Why not smaller states?
Because New York could build an audience, a theater following. And we had faith that if we could build a following, we could catch a break.
Did you literally research like, oh, there's a dearth of good improv
of hipsters
in New York
with money to burn?
No, we did like a showcase in New York at that point. And we did a showcase in New York. And the vibe was if we came to New York, we could sustain a longer run.
And Los Angeles wasn't even
Los Angeles was like a showcase
table.
Town. If you went to LA.
Right.
You would do a showcase for some woman at Fox, or you would do a showcase for a guy at Comedy Central, and then it'd be gone, you know?
Right.
So we wanted to kind of hit the ground running and keep the shows running to build word of mouth.
Right. Oh, okay, great. So you came to New York in 95?
Six. March 96. Of 96.
All right.
How many shows were you doing a week? What was the theater?
We were
was
doing probably shows
night?
Five nights a week, guaranteed. We did... We came to New York with like two shows, Punch Your Friend in the Face and Bucket of Truth, shows that we had put on in Chicago. And then we would do our free show, Ask Cat, on Sunday nights. And then we would do like Luna Lounge, which was the hip alternative Monday night show. And then inevitably there'd be like a Wednesday night show that like the guys from the States, David Wayne's group, did Stella. So we would do Stella one night. And, you know, so we were kind of up at least five nights a week.
Wow.
And then rehearsing and fly. Back in the day when you couldn't post an Instagram, like, come see our show this weekend.
Right.
You had to get flyers printed and go to Washington Square and accost people.
Right. Oh, wow.
And that's where we were when we landed in New York.
You'd hit Washington Square and
hit young people and flyers that were like 5x3.
Right.
Cut them up at the Kinko's so you could get like six to a page or whatever.
And who in the group slacked at handing those out? I know someone was
probably
like
Poehler a little bit.
The
Amy Poehler.
No, she came out, but yeah. The boys were a little more aggressive at flyering, I would say. But she came out. She was good.
Okay, good. That's...
And where did you guys have to take on other side jobs during this time?
Yeah, well, I sold my van, so that gave me like a month
$800.
Or two of rent. Yeah, it gave me like 2 months in rent, so I was okay.
How much was rent, do you remember?
Well, I had a room in Hell's Kitchen with a guy named Leo Allen and a guy named Johnny Spanish. And we had, I had a tiny little closet of a room for like $325 a month.
Oh, that's amazing.
Great.
So finding that. After I lived on somebody's floor for a few weeks, a guy named Bill Cotton. Then I moved to Brooklyn, and Brooklyn was terrible. And then I got to Manhattan, and it was great.
Brooklyn was terrible. Just, it seemed too far away.
It was right by the Gowanus Canal, and they hadn't irrigated it yet, so it stunk like sewage every night. It just reeked. So you would wake up with a wall of stench if your window was open, and you would think, oh my God, I peed myself. And then you're like, no, that's just Brooklyn waking you up.
There was a giant fan that broke, I think, in 19... the 60s that churned up the water in the Gowanus, and they were like,
that's exactly
bother.
Where I was living.
Yeah.
It was probably toxic.
Yeah.
But now it's better, right? There's flow down there.
They added some flow.
Yeah.
So now the condoms are circulating on top of the water.
The condom eddies.
I had an illegal sublet for 11 years. But I was—
In New York?
In New York. 11 years I lived there. It was over at an Irish restaurant and—
In Manhattan?
In Manhattan. I was so scared of the landlords that my refrigerator broke. I broke it trying to knock the ice out. And I lived for 9 months without a refrigerator.
Because you didn't want to stir anything up. It was so like—
Yeah, exactly.
You never asked for anything from the landlord.
I thought I would get kicked out. So, and that's when I started dating
my
wife, Cynthia.
School. Oh.
And I remember I had an ice cream. That's right. I had an ice cream.
Know your rights.
Ice cream cake for her. No, I was doing stand up at night. And I remember I had a cake for her, and I had it in a cooler. And she was just like, what is wrong with
that?
You?
Was your refrigerator or cooler?
Yes. Yeah. Very impressive. It made a good first impression.
That's funny. Yeah. That's like,
it's not that funny.
I had a car where I lost the gas cap.
Yeah.
So instead of buying a gas cap, I just twisted up a rag and shoved it in there. My dad got so mad at me.
Just
because he's like, that's like a rolling Molotov cocktail.
You're right. Yeah.
That's so dangerous. I'm like, you're right.
Now would you like
but
to
it
light
it? But
it
was that thing of like, ah, I could fix it and buy a new one, or I could just twist a rag in there.
Well, especially after the hardware ad, he was probably like, come
you
on.
You should have learned
the
something.
Hardware money probably wasn't rolling in yet. This right. was my diesel rabbit back in the day when I owned a diesel rabbit.
You had
oh my God.
A diesel car?
Oh.
Diesel rabbit.
Wow.
And you had in Chicago, you had to plug it in at night. Because the diesel fuel turns to jelly in the winter.
Wow.
Because it's got oil and other things in it, so you have to have a block
a blanket,
warmer.
Like a block. Oh,
a block
wow.
warmer. But I didn't have an outlet, so I had to park it a block away at my college at the Joann Fabrics, illegally stealing power from the Joann Fabrics.
Wait, how did you plug into Joann
There was
Fabrics?
An outdoor outlet.
Oh, oh, my. Well, that's their fault.
That's their fault.
Yeah.
Did you notice that, or were there other diesel drivers
I just knew
who
that
you off where all the
No, the guy, when I bought it used or whatever, and yeah. he's like, you're gonna, and then in the winter, you're going to have to use this block warmer. So there's a little plug, and then you get an extension cord.
Wow.
And it was easier because there was no parking on our street
right.
where I lived in college, so I had to park off. And then I found the Joann Fabrics, and I would park on the side of the Joann and plug in every night. And wow. nobody ever said anything.
Wow, Joann Fabrics.
I probably owe them.
So cool there.
Probably like a year's worth of power, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not going to pay
This was
though.
Like an early yeah. electric
Do Joann
vehicle.
Fabrics own people listen to the show?
Yes. They're actually
so.
One of our sponsors. They're
I'd
online
love for them
now.
To be.
Okay.
They make erectile dysfunction
Right now we just
pills.
Have
So they're our biggest sponsor.
They're cut they with segue. Oxycontin too. That it brings you down That's at right. the end of it.
You gotta cut it somehow.
Yeah. You don't want to stay up the whole
no,
time.
No. It's exhausting.
What happens if the diesel turns jellyfies?
You can't crank it over. It won't turn.
Okay.
So when you get your starter going, it's so muddy and gelatinous that it won't turn the crank.
And what do you do? Do you just have to leave your car there forever?
Then you'd have to get it somewhere and they would have to heat up the
warm it up.
The block, the engine block.
I never knew that about diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other peculiarities
you heard it here first,
about
folks.
So do you get engine? Nostalgic when you see other diesel vehicles? Like, oh, man.
Well, the diesel rabbit was, they didn't make a bunch of them. So I am right. nostalgic for the diesel rabbit. It was like a little two-door lime green. Also had other issues. So when it rained, for whatever reason, all the water that came down the windshield would collect inside this heater. So when you turned on the heater or opened the heater vent, like in the middle,
right.
just water would flood. It would just go, whoosh, wow, for some reason.
I had a Volkswagen Beetle that-
Oh, never had a Beetle.
Had an electric, when you made right turns, it honked.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah, so I just started waving to people, like complete strangers, like, hello, because everyone would look up like, what the fuck?
I had a Chevy Nova that had a hole where you could see down through the highway when you were driving.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Matt, do you remember the first late night sketch you were on?
I'm so sorry. My first Conan sketch was probably, I don't have a specific memory. It was probably like a satellite TV channel would be my
right.
guess
yes.
with like, I don't know.
You did one, I remember many.
That's amazing.
You did one with Amy Poehler where you played a husband and wife.
Oh, yeah.
Newscasting team.
Oh.
And you started delivering the news, and then immediately making banter, it got very passive aggressive.
That's
and
funny.
It escalated, and then you, at the end of it, just go, and you grab the desk and overturn the news desk. And it's, I haven't seen that in years. You know, we're digging up a lot of old archival stuff and putting it online. And later that year, I think stuff like that's going up, and I'm dying to see that again because I remember watching that. And
I don't
just,
remember that one.
Oh man,
I remember.
It to me, it was just like a perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Little video.
I remember kicking John Groff's car in a satellite. John Groff had a car.
Yeah, that was he was a head writer. John Groff was a head writer.
He had a shitbox car,
mm-hmm.
And he donated it for some shoot. And I remember it was like. Road Rage Channel, perfect title.
Okay. Mm.
And he allowed me to like kick it, and I was like kind of trashing.
And he said, "Go for it."
Yeah, he said, "Go for it." So I slammed the door and kicked it and put a dent in it. And he didn't.
That's great.
And yeah, he probably made money on that.
Yeah, at least $25 for the wardrobe bump.
And then you also there was a bit we used to do that was incredibly labor intensive. So we stopped after a while, but it was Guests Will Never Have Back. And it would be elaborate pre-tapes of Conan with a guest. Then it didn't work out that well. And I think you were an animal handler.
That couldn't have gone more better.
Yeah, who's allergic.
That was ridiculously well executed.
It was so great.
They taped latex here under my neck. Your makeup person did such a great job. And then he was laying behind the couch and just inflating it with a tube.
Oh, my God.
And so I had like a peafowl, like had a chicken that was a peafowl.
Yeah.
And then Conan's like, are you allergic to animals? I'm like, oh, yeah, I am, but it's fine. And then by the end of the interview, you could see the surface tension. And Conan was like, when you're by a balloon that's about to pop, the whole interview was him going,
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It's really great.
It really came off extremely well.
Yes. Well, it was cool because we had we shared all the great wardrobe makeup people from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So there was this guy, Louie, there who was
Yes, it was Louie.
And you just go up, you sit in the chair, and you come down with this amazing, this bladder that, and it works so simply.
It works so simply.
Someone literally blowing.
And we used to do a show at UCB, our Bloody Halloween show, and I borrowed that idea where we had a woman's heart explode in our story.
Oh, wow.
So we would pin like a condom to her bra and then put a shirt over it and fill the condom with blood.
Oh, my God.
And then have her trail. She had a boa.
Uh-huh.
So the tube was in the boa. Uh-huh. And then she would throw the boa over the couch and she would lean back and then somebody would inflate and then her heart would and it would explode and there'd be blood in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's elaborate special effects.
Yeah. Well, not really. It's practical, simple.
Yeah.
But fun. So I learned stuff from early Conan, too.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys were in, and that's the other reason I'm glad all this stuff is going to go up, because you were such an integral part of the show. You guys were on, like, almost every night on the show
in
a pre-tape or in a live bit, and you guys elevated everything. And so then it was, Conan is a creature of habit, and especially with performances, and especially in front of, we had performers who would be great in rehearsal, and just having the crowd there and the red light on would just get a little tight. And so,
yeah, because some actors aren't used to being in front of a live audience.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know, it's Darwinian. It's like, well, okay, that's not good. And you guys, pre-tape or live, or just nailed everything.
Because that was where you came from.
Right.
Was live.
So live performance.
It was more Matt Walsh, more Matt, you know, more Amy.
Lean on it. Yeah, Amy. Yeah.
More Matt Besser.
Yeah, Ian.
More Ian Roberts. And we just used you guys almost every day.
There was one where I think it was a Everything Can Break channel, like some idea that was probably a Brian McCann idea. But McCann, I think, got cut. Because we were throwing things at each other and he had to go, or maybe it was Ian.
Ian got cut.
Yeah. Oh, was it Ian who got cut?
It was Ian who got cut.
Oh, wow.
Because I forget where I was. We were shooting something. I think we were out of town.
Yeah.
And I got the call that Ian got cut.
This is so deep. This is so specific. It was a deep
cut. Did he get disability payment?
No.
There's a lawsuit still investigating this claim.
Wait, what's that? Aaron.
Input.
What's happening?
He fell onto the corner of a desk. He was throwing something too heavy, and he spun around, and his face went right onto the metal corner of a desk, and he had to be rushed to the hospital and get plastic surgery on his face.
Oh, my God.
Were you there? Were you working?
He got a couple extra things done,
I mean,
too.
I wasn't specifically in the scene doc when it happened, but I remember it going down. Him and, I think, McCann were going, like, nuts.
Right.
He carried – it was like something crazy. He spun around like a shot put, and then his face went right into the corner of the thing. But I think we still use the footage.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta salvage the footage. Yeah.
Yeah, we got
it. Wow. No, that was – awful. And when you think
they
about
showed up
and
in
the
hospital and made Ian sign a waiver during surgery.
Wait till he's under and just move his hand with a pen.
Sweeney, go in there.
You signed it. Oh, man. I remember McCann went to the emergency room once. I forgot this. And it was my fault. And I felt awful. But it was a bar fight scene. And
breakaway bottle?
Breakaway bottle
on the head, right?
I think Andy Blitz hit him.
Oh.
I think I was there for that day, too.
Oh, wow.
Well, I remember it.
And then I hit him.
What happened?
I followed up, and basically what I did was there was a broken piece of
glass under his
head. And then I wedged it into his scalp/skull. And he was in agony, quiet, because him, he was just super quiet. And I was like, oh God, this, he must be in agony because he's, he was just not himself.
Yeah.
And I went to the, I was outside in the emergency room and I was like, great, glad you came. But the second they took it out, he was all better. But it must have hurt off terribly.
That's, yeah, there's so many occupational hazards.
Well, candy glass, you do try to wear a hat or a wig. If you're breaking it on someone's head, or you break it, if you're going to break it on the side and try to like keep your hand open.
You're an expert on candy glass.
Well, I've done, it's expensive too, by the way. I get a little insulted by how much it costs. There's like a monopoly.
Oh, of course.
How much is it? Because those are, they're really fun.
It's like 35 bucks for a beer bottle. I'm not kidding. Yeah.
Really?
For one beer bottle. So if you do a six pack joke, that's 200 bucks, whatever.
Wow.
10. You know what I mean?
Case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a wine bottle is going to be like 40 or 50.
Wow.
And then the bigger the item, the more.
Yeah.
A Methuselah. Forget
so I hope, all the aspiring writers listening are taking note.
Yeah.
That's something to think about when you're putting your packet together.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the sketch people like write in because it is fun to have breakaway stuff.
Yeah.
But then you realize how much it is. So then you're like, let's just get a small thing we can break.
Yeah. How about it?
Or a real bottle.
Or
right?
We just smash a plate. We don't break it on anybody's head.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I love that you're an expert on the art of,
I know.
Of fake
Very few
breaking.
Things I can be an expert on. That would be one of them.
Breakaway chairs, go.
I would say have a stuntman do it once and see where the cuts are on the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Like stunts generally, be safe. Don't worry about how it looks. Just be safe. Like that's what I always tell people. Like don't care. Like they're, if you really want to sell the punch or if you could, try to leap a little further. It'll sell, it'll sell you falling down the stairs better or whatever. Like, ignore that.
Right. Don't do it.
Fall down the stairs. Either don't do it and have somebody professional do it.
Yes.
Or if you're going to fall down the stairs, just be really safe. Don't worry about how it looks at all.
Right.
Well, yeah, because the people telling you, I mean, they're human.
Yeah.
We're all just making this shit up as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like anyone's really an expert on your safety.
We're all highly fallible.
We are highly fallible.
Yeah. I remember one of our first UCB sketches for the comedy show on Comedy Central. We had a big gunfight in a living room and I had a shotgun as my cop character and they gave it to me and then I'm like, is it loaded? He's like, no. I'm like, okay. And then I pointed it down and I pulled the trigger and bang, it was loaded.
No.
Oh my God.
It was loaded. Not that that could kill you, but it could hurt you.
Yes.
Because there's like wadding in there.
And there's a little black.
And if you did it up against your head, you could die, obviously.
Yeah.
If it was perfect seal. But the point is, like, that was a great lesson to learn.
Yeah.
It's like, don't trust anyone.
No.
And this was the stunt coordinator or the FX guy who told me, like, don't worry about it. It's not loaded. I'm like,
what did
okay.
What did he say? Was he like,
oh? He's like, oh, I guess
my bad. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's another one for the kids listening.
Yes.
I bet you have great advice on child working with child guns. Actors and animals.
Don't guilt. Here's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did a classic desk bit for Conan where people came up. I don't know what the premise was. But anyways, like people were presenting. You guys had written like 20 jokes or 10 bits and like five would make it for show.
Right.
I don't know what the bit was. It was a desk bit. Yeah. But you guys always overwrote.
Yeah.
And then we'd cut three of those. So
and
two
everyone,
would air.
The good news, everybody gets paid. Like you're there for the day, you get paid.
Yeah.
But there was a boy who got cut and I heard his mom in the hallway outside. She's like, you go tell Conan you're sorry that you didn't sell your thing correctly or that your thing didn't work.
And he was, I remember this story.
And I remember
was six.
Yes. And I was like, hey, you were, I just like shouted over, hey, you were great today.
Good.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
And your mother was terrible.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But that was just a weird, awful thing to hear.
I've heard
that. In the airlock. It was right in the airlock.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That boy was Justin Bieber.
And now Tom Cruise is going to pay.
See maybe it is worthwhile.
Yeah.
Because he's had a wonderful career.
That was great of you to yell that. And I'm sure of course the mother didn't. She's
well, I'm
like,
sure.
What's wrong with that guy?
I know. You were terrible.
Complimenting my kid, my loser kid.
Yeah.
I had a kid do that once too and came up and said, I'm sorry that we ruined the sketch or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because the sketch got canceled. And I was like, It has absolutely. Yeah, I spent 10 minutes like trying
good for
to.
For you, that's important.
Well,
though.
Of course. And it's like, no, it was canceled because we didn't.
It's the writer's fault.
It's always the writer's fault. Of course.
We always overwrite too. There's inevitably 50% of this is going to get cut.
Yeah. Right. And it was the kid. I hope the kid's listening now. You were terrible and you ruined something we really worked hard on. But
I know. I always feel so bad.
Oh, so terrible.
Even with adults, when stuff gets cut.
Oh, it's awful. Hard.
Yeah, and it'd have to be the one to break it to them.
Awful.
It's okay if you're like an adult, because that's the game.
I know.
But a little kid, come on.
That was a hard thing to learn. Like, we'd rehearse a sketch, and often it was older. Like, we learned after a while, stop casting real. Well, there's a fine line with older actors.
Oh, yeah,
but we had someone playing Einstein.
There's some real hams.
Yeah, they are really super hammy.
Yeah.
And then we're just like, oh, let's just have Glazer play.
Yeah.
You know, just put a white wig on, a crazy wig and mustache on Glazer, and then you don't worry about it. But having to go after rehearsal and cut someone, and then if they watch at night, see someone else doing it. But you just learn to do it and not think about it. The first few times.
Well, there's no time.
There's no time.
Your show eats material like crazy. Yeah. You can't get attached to anything.
No.
You learn that early on, I'm sure.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's all desperate.
It's nothing's personal anymore.
Yeah. It's a good lesson to learn, though.
And yet,
so detached.
And yet, you know what? It is personal.
It's personal when it's bad. It's not personal when it's positive.
Right.
No, exactly.
That's never a reflection.
That's a
of
good point.
Yeah, teamwork. True teamwork's never personal.
Yeah.
So around this time, the theater was growing. Did you feel like, you know, being on TV was kind of helping legitimize things, or at least helping draw some attention to the theater?
Yeah, I think for the sketch group Upright Citizens Brigade, I think having a TV show and then being able to make a go in New York with Conan, the Conan bits came first, I think. And we were sort of living
show start
98. Okay. So we were sort of living hand to mouth from 96 to 98, doing Conan bits or doing things, whatever we could do to survive. Right. And then I think once we had a show on Comedy Central, around the same time, we opened a theater, and that kind of gave us a sense of permanence, having a location where we could do our own shows and, like, continue to teach classes. And then all these friends we had made, like, who came through classes, like Andy Daly or Rob Riggle or Rob Hubel, or, like, people who are also coming up through the Conan, like, scenes as well. It was neat to have everybody in one place and to not worry about anything. It was, like, keep the tickets low. Lock it up at night, pay the light bill. It was pretty simple, you know?
Right.
So that was great.
And all those great people you just mentioned, were they all, did any of them migrate from Chicago, or they all just were here in
New York? All meets in New York.
Yeah.
Like Paul Scheer, Andy Secunda, who wrote on the show later for you guys.
Chris Gethard.
Chris Gethard.
Yeah, we talked to him.
Yeah.
I mean.
He talked about how that changed his life, really.
Yeah, and it's.
Yeah.
People forget what to go from not being on TV to a show that, like, Conan can put you on TV that night is just crazy as an actor.
Yeah.
Because, like, with a commercial, you're going to audition 50 times.
Right.
And then you're going to get one, and then you're going to shoot it, and then it'll come out a month later. But, like, to get a call from Cecile Pleba or whoever was casting and said, come down, we got a Frankenstein bit, and then you'd come down. You're filming it, and then you can tell your parents that night, I'm on Conan tonight, I think, if I make it.
Sometimes
you call them and you go, I don't know if I'm going to make it. But as an actor, as a kid in New York, it's unbelievable.
It's great.
It's such a delight to have that immediate feedback, that immediate gratification.
The teaching is really interesting to me, because I think once you're doing all these shows, teaching new people was still really an important component to you guys, right?
I think the sort of like, I don't know, to the new world, the sort of gold we brought back to from the new world was long form improv. So we came from Chicago and we came to New York, and nobody was doing what we call long form improv, which is sort of sustained scene work around a single suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Chicago City Limits existed, but it was very like short form, whose line is it?
Very short
form. Games.
So what we were teaching was something we cared about,
but
also we connected with an audience that had never seen it. So they saw us do our first Ass Cats, and they're like, how do you, what is, I want to do that.
Right.
You know, I want to be able to sustain scenes and do tricky edits and, you know, rapid pace, you know, things on their feet. So that
you
was.
You were missionaries.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. I guess so. The Bible was the Del Close teachings. Yeah. So that's exactly why we kept teaching. And then I didn't really like teaching after a while because I think you need to have a learnable moment in every scene. And I can't, I can only go like, I don't know why, but it's not working.
Right.
Sometimes, you know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas someone like Ian Roberts, who's maybe one of the greatest improv teachers you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
He can like see any scene and he can think about it and he can give you an idea and then he can tell you why that idea will fix what you were doing. And So he's very good. So that's why teaching, I did it for, you know, probably a couple of years right when I landed.
Right.
But I stopped teaching a long time ago.
Did teaching help you, like just in your own performing, or was it just like, oh,
I am teaching. I'm teaching this week because we have the Del Close Marathon coming up. I'm
teaching
Thursday and Friday, but I'm teaching a character class. I'm not teaching improv because I feel like I can teach a character class. I can help people create a character from scratch. And that's like a 3-hour class. I won't have to see him for 8 weeks.
Right, right.
I won't have to like watch someone in the class who I know is never going to get it and continue to give them notes. Yeah. That's hard. That's hard.
That's got to be a drag.
Yeah, because it's like in those cases.
You want to help everybody.
You do.
Yeah.
You want to provide some epiphany for everyone in that class that you experience. It's like, oh my God, that's what it feels like to be in the groove or to improvise successfully. You want to give that to everyone and you can't.
Right.
Yeah. Some people are just there to, I don't know.
The people who struggle.
Be better at public speaking or, you know. There's
please their people, parents.
Yeah.
But those people can do it. Like the people who get in trouble with improv specifically are like just personality types that need to be controlling.
Right.
An inability to listen. And like kind of not respecting physical space. Some people are constantly like grabbing people. Like there's issues.
Yeah.
And so to fix them, you would have to retinker their personality.
Right. Their childhoods.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so those are the people that struggle, I think, with collaborative art forms like improv.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I'm sure some people start out that way and then immediately the light goes off, you know, the light goes on and they're like, oh, okay, I need to. But then there's, you're saying there's some people just never, they just can't change.
Personality wise, it's a big, tall, you could, but you'd have to be there for them every week in therapy and talking about it and helping them land them. And walking and walking them through the change in their personality. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that.
No,
I'm
that's
not going to do
invested.
That. Exactly.
Well, you mentioned Ian Roberts and was it,
I taught Ian to improvise. He was never funny. He was one of those personalities that was very controlling.
Right. That's why I brought him up.
I taught him.
Yeah. What did you love having him on Veep with you this season?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny about Ian is he's so like UCB in general. We don't really communicate a lot. Right. But like Ian was on my show and didn't tell me. So he's like on set one day.
Oh my God.
I wasn't working that day. And then the next day I show up for work and like, oh, Ian Roberts was here yesterday. I'm like, what? So I texted Ian. I'm like, why didn't you tell me you're on? Because casting's big. I didn't know who they cast.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And like, Ian Roberts was on. I'm like, Ian, why didn't you tell me? He's like, oh yeah, I don't know. I figured I might see her. Maybe I wouldn't.
That's like, really funny.
Well, sounds
congrats like and let me know when you're working next. I'll come by and hang out.
Yeah, it's like he was at your house and didn't say hi. Yeah.
He was in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Veep, that, it's just the greatest show. That must have been so much fun.
And it got better and better.
Oh, thank you.
I think.
Thank you.
You specifically. That's
my praise. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Thank you.
No, but it was like by the end, you were such a, your character was always a big part of the show, but it really, I felt like that last season, you really got a lot. I mean, once you.
Mike had success, like him turning
into. I love that.
Him turning into Walter Cronkite for the country was great. And I think it was a great device for the show because I told Dave before the season. Because you can always pitch ideas and then you'll pitch Mandel an idea. And he's like, well, it's a good idea, but here's... And then they've already thought about it in the writer's room and he'll tell you why it dead ends here.
Oh.
So you always pitch ideas and they mutate, but sometimes they use them. And I just said, like, I like the idea of how Trump talks to Hannity, like how he, you know, has access to him and he gets his ideas from him.
Yeah.
I don't know who's using who, but...
Right.
And Dave's like, yeah, we kind of have an idea. So, and then I think from that, you know, a year or two ago, they came up with a much better version of that. But what I like about Mike's journey this season, even other story elements, is the season was supposed to be 10 episodes, and then they shortened it to 7. So they had mapped out 10 episodes. So they had to truncate, and I think they'd already started filming 1 and 2.
When they got word?
Oh, my God.
When they decided, because it was like they wanted to give reasonable days to Julia. They didn't want her there 15 hours a day because she was on the back end of her battle with cancer.
Right.
And she's great, but they still want to be courteous to that. But what ended up working, especially in like the last episode, is like there's a lot – sometimes in shows – conveniently, what you're talking about appears on TV.
Right.
And it's an illustration of that. And sometimes when you watch it, you're like, oh, that's cheesy. That's so lazy. But in our show, having Mike in that world gave you a reason to care about that footage. Yes. And they just did it seamlessly. So what I admired about, because they were truncating everything, and sometimes those devices to like, oh, fuck, if we had a news story that could just tell this, then we don't have to have a whole scene about it.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, we have a news anchor.
That's great.
And so I think it was also very efficient for storytelling as well.
Yeah. No, it really kind of drove everything along.
And it never feels like, really, another news item that's happening while you're talking about what's happening.
Right.
But you never felt that.
Well, you brought up a fascinating thing, just you pitching ideas. And I don't know if people realize in a lot of TV shows, they have these just walls between, well, you're a performer.
Right.
And the writers are doing the writing.
Sequestered.
Yes.
And then, and I think that obviously hurts things. And then you hear something, like to me, The Office was a great example where I think it was much more collaborative between the performers and the writing staff. And of course, many times the performers were the writing staff. So, and the results are pretty good. And so how did it work on Veep then?
I think in the early seasons, we definitely had like a free take where Armando would say, okay, let's muck about, try to keep it moving, but do whatever you want. Have fun with it, he would say. And from those takes, whole lines or whole exchanges would end up in the final cut. And then when the early table reads, early seasons, they would workshop scripts on their feet. So if something wasn't working, we would read the script once and put them down and then improvise around the scene and try to fix it. And then the writers would be in the room transcribing things we said, and lo and behold, they would end up in the script. Oh, so they used improv to generate dialogue and fix scenes. Come season 5, 6, 7, when we started getting into America, the American writers, the Brits had left, I think it was more spotted usage, but the channels of collaboration were still wide open. So the process was always like pitch ideas on set before the season, come into the writer's room. It was always two flow, but it was a little more improvising with pitching as opposed to like whole cloth writer sitting down and taking notes while you improvise off the first draft.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's great.
It's a long-winded answer, but
no, it's not at all. I think that's really.
But I think it, in a way, too, sometimes it's out of necessity. Like with a Conan bit, for example, if you guys are cranking out 12 satellite TV things,
right?
And I come in, and you're like, "Well, Walsh, it's called Break the Window," and all I can tell you is there's like 8 things you can break, and there's 4 you can't. Ready? Action!
Yeah.
I think that lends itself to improv a lot, but that's out of necessity.
Right.
So I think Conan in the early days for us,
Out of shoddy writing.
Well, the pace and also the pace.
Idea. Yeah, of
course. But you guys were always receptive to like, oh, if we can get Ian to do this character. He's so great when he's angry.
Yes.
Just make sure you get angry and it's called the angry carpet cleaner.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And then the writers were there and they'd say, okay, say this, make sure you say. But that was very collaborative and very improvisational too. But that was out of necessity too.
Right.
Because the amount of work you guys have to generate, the amount of bits you have to tape.
Yeah, and then we started writing to your personalities, so making it more collaborative.
Yeah.
And less work for us again.
Sure. But if it works, who cares?
I mean, I'm sure as an actor and an improviser, it's all like you probably come into things and you're not sure whether you're being invited to sort of improvise on stuff or if that's maybe frowned upon. I'm always happy when improvisers want to just go for it. And I'm not precious about my lines, but some writers are very precious. So is that something that you kind of establish in advance? Like, We have a...
Yeah, that's good.
Well, hopefully I'm at a point where people know what I do and they want me because
that's why I can
lend a little something to it. Not like... Yeah. But if I worked for Aaron Sorkin, I'm sure he wouldn't let me change anything. But there are usually the things that I choose to do are people who want to collaborate and want to use the resources that I can bring to something.
Right.
Because I'm not a huge ego. I'm not going to be telling them everything that needs to happen. I'm going to go, here's some good ideas, and that's good, but why don't we make this better? And that's always been my dream, is to be able to contribute to the material I get to perform, whether it's writing it or just like standing having a session with the writer before we do the scene. And like with Veep, every scene, we never totally memorize. We get to set, and inevitably they give us brand new sides because they've rewritten it and rewritten it and rewritten it. So you don't ever commit to memory totally. You just kind of have an idea.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So in the morning when you show up, and then when we rehearse, you're always looking for things to discover in the set, or when you do the read through or the sort of walk through, you feel the energy of Tony giving you that line and you realize, oh, you should give him a cookie on that line. And sort of choreography becomes part of it. And I don't know. It's an intangible thing. You just sort of, you're aiming for a target that is like a gut feeling.
Right. And just a chemistry.
Yeah.
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 Well, yeah, because Veep was so, I mean, it's so tight. Like the
Keep Julia happy so she doesn't throw a tantrum.
Yes, that's
priority one. Yeah. Priority one.
Yeah, she seems like a nightmare.
A Roseanne tantrum is what we call that.
Keep
Julia
throwing
a Roseanne tantrum.
Yeah. and so, what are you working on now?
What am I working on now? I just did a Netflix movie where I played a dad in a rom-com called The Perfect Date.
Okay.
This kid, Noah Centineo, and
love him.
A gal from Ally.
Like YouTube people?
Austin and Ally. No, Austin and Ally.
That's a
the gal who played Ally, Disney.
Disney, yeah.
I forget her name. It's terrible. She was really cool. So I did that, and I played a dad, kind of like Harry Dean Stanton in Pretty in Pink. Was that his name?
Oh, great. Yeah.
That kind of down and out, like the kids taking care of the dad when Molly Ringwald had to take care of
him. That sounds great.
Yeah.
But still like a good guy, not a...
A good guy, but like it's kind of sad because you see the girl like tying his tie for his interview in Pretty in Pink. But I really like that because I love that movie, and... So I was excited to do that. And then I'm pushing an indie movie that I'll hopefully be doing with Isla Fisher come September.
Oh, great.
But that's like
indie. In France?
It'll be here in LA within 30 miles.
What was the movie you shot in France?
It's called Under the Eiffel Tower. Then that came out in March.
Oh,
that's actually probably dropping on, I should promo that. It's dropping on Netflix pretty soon. Keep an eye out, Under the Eiffel Tower. It's another romantic comedy.
Very nice.
And then, thank you, Michael.
Yes.
Thank you. And then
I'm glad Netflix is kind of, there's this romantic comedy boon happening.
Well, it's so funny. Those are the ones that you realize what friends of yours love romantic comedies, no matter what they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's a girl I work with, a woman I work with, she's like, I saw you on The Perfect. I'm like, you watched them? She's like, oh my God, every one of them. Like they'll watch any romantic comedy. You're like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Even the Hallmark Channel ones. Yeah.
It's funny to see what people's tastes are.
Yeah. Right.
Because I always assume, like, none of my friends are going to watch a romantic comedy.
But be surprised.
Be surprised, yeah.
I've watched every one, but I'm not going to, I don't want to tip my cards.
Yeah.
Every single one
I just love
ever made?
Comedies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how we get segue to your family in Austria so we can keep all of that stuff.
I know.
I mean, get the conversation to talking about Salzburg, Austria.
There you go.
Oh. Yeah.
That
have
was
you,
my...
Have you spent any time there?
Why don't I hum
there?
Some Mozart? And then you can go, that reminds me of my time in Salzburg.
I did a year... This is deja vu. I studied in Salzburg for a year.
Okay, that's all we need. We're all set.
We got it. We got the pickup, yeah.
Take... Kevin knows what
to
do.
Well, just tell me what to say.
No, we're all set.
You don't have to trick me like a monkey.
We're all set.
I'll just say it. I'm an actor. Just write it down and I'll say what you need transitionally.
My impression is you're not very collaborative, so...
Well, we could say... We didn't say this on record, I don't think, but we... We just got back from Ghana with your Veep co-star,
Sam
Richardson.
Some great pictures. I followed Sam's Insta.
Yeah.
It was so great to see. Mm-hmm. I'm so jealous you guys got to go over there. That would be really fun.
Well,
I just have like dumb Irish roots. Like I don't have anything that sexy. Like Ghana sounds like it was stunning and so interesting.
It was
very interesting.
It was like what I think real travel experiences should be, where you're... you're learning, you're sometimes a little bit out of your, comfort zone, but you're like really, you know, sensorily engaged all the time. All the synapses are firing, right. And
worried about offending people at all.
Yeah.
That's my constant.
Constantly sweating.
I would be like that. I would be like accidentally like, I'm going to do something accidentally so offensive.
That's
that
all
I don't want to happen.
Yeah. And then you think about the thing you're not going to do so and much that then you do it. Yeah.
Or in the palace, like I would break the historical sword or something.
Right.
Like that's like, I just want to stand rigid. Tell me where to be.
We did go to a palace in Kumasi. Are you referencing pictures that Sam put
up? Oh, yeah.
We met the palace.
The Queen Mother.
We met the Queen Mother of basically of the Asante.
She's the royal.
Yeah.
And you had to bring gifts, right?
We had to bring gifts.
Goat and liquor.
Yeah,
and,
we did.
not a goat. It's called a ram.
Sorry.
And, yeah. No, we were corrected because I thought it was
you
a goat.
You kept calling it a goat.
Right. Yeah. And they're like, no. And then schnapps, which I love. I don't know whether that's for the ram or for.
I didn't know who drinks schnapps, but now we do.
Know.
It's
the royalty.
Maybe the Queen Mother.
Royalty. Like a little nip.
The Queen Mother looked like she's quite comfortable in that.
Is it American schnapps? Like that sugary peppermint schnapps that we drank?
Oh, I don't know what brand
it was. No, it was imported stuff, they said.
Okay.
The imported stuff they like better than, I think there's also local schnapps. Right. Yeah.
And then we brought something else called cash. Like money and envelopes.
Put money?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
American or Ghana money?
It was
Ghana
money. Yeah. Ghana currency.
But we impressed her. And then there was a moment where we thought we were going to get to meet the king.
Right.
Because she had like passed up the ladder that they came
cool.
with cash. Yeah.
When we were done, she just said, go meet the king. And that, her just kind of saying that off the cuff set all this activity into motion.
Ooh. Yes. And did you get to meet the king?
We didn't.
We did not.
Because then it turned out there was controversy with some of the other chiefs because they were like, we already have people in line to meet the king. And if these Americans get to go meet him, then it's going to look bad.
Right. Even though they're
but Sam has got to be a celebrity over there. Like he's a successful Hollywood actor.
I know. Right. Well, it's weird. I don't know if the queen has
Conan,
seen Veep.
The counterbalance. That they,
I wanted to promote our comedy marathon too.
Oh yeah.
Del Close Marathon is
great.
In LA. It used to be in New York.
It used to be New York. Yeah.
It was in New York years.
For 20.
Oh my God.
Is this the first time in LA?
Yeah. Our 21st marathon is coming this weekend.
Is it at both theaters?
Yeah. It'll be at Franklin.
It's at Staples. The Staples Center.
No.
I'm sorry. I just thought you were trading up.
No.
In a big way.
No. How are
the rental on that was too big.
Are you going to be?
We looked into it.
Performing there?
Yeah. I'll be doing like probably 10 shows over the course of Friday at 4 it starts and goes.
But you
till
probably
Sunday
get the good times. You don't have to do it at 4 a.m. anymore.
I will not be there at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
No. Right.
I will not be there at 4 a.m.
No. And no teaching during that period.
I am teaching Thursday and Friday.
Oh, that's when you are teaching. Right.
Class.
That's right.
Thursday and Friday. I'm teaching a character
class.
But
listening
that's
is an
really
important
fun.
Part of improv.
Guys, I don't pay attention. I think I prove that every week on this show. Why is that doddering fool on a microphone?
Well, I would venture to say probably a lot of our listeners are going to be at the Del Close Marathon already.
Oh, yeah.
But if they're not, then
let
they
know.
Should be. Yeah.
No, it's fun. And you guys have probably been there, right? Back in the day?
I've never went, actually.
Never went?
No.
You seem very familiar with it.
Well, I went through.
The way you referenced the midnight shows and the bit shows or whatever.
No, I went through the UCB program, but I never went to the New York Marathon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I read about last year's marathon, and it was just people talking about
stuff
going on at
article.
5 in the morning. Yeah,
my favorite thing is like after 1 in the morning to like 5 a.m., there's these slots called the bit shows, and you get a 15-minute slot. And they're just like a premise that you're forced to execute for 15 minutes. Like one of my favorites is To Catch a Predator prov.
Uh-huh.
So they'll have a scene where somebody comes in. And then a kid is in the room, supposedly. And then everybody comes out of the closets and doors and says, I'm John Stossel and you're busted. Yeah. And then they reset and they try to do as many of those entrapments in the course of 15
oh,
minutes.
Wow.
So a new improviser will come in and then they'll... And then, like,
that's
and back in the day, there was one of the originals was Cosby Prov. Everybody did a terrible Bill Cosby impression and had a terrible sweater.
Yeah.
That was one of the granddaddies of them.
But
we won't see that
we're
this
not
year.
Doing... No, that has not been relaunched and won't be relaunched anytime soon.
It's all new in L.A.
And then there was Spacey Prov. God.
Yeah, Spacey Prov, I'm sure. But anyways, the bit shows are fun to sample.
Yeah, and that's it's like there's so much stage time available, so lots of people get to go up, which is cool.
Yeah, exactly. And people come from all over the country to do improv or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mention those dates again.
June 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Excellent. That sounds
at
great.
The Upright
UCB
Citizens
Sunset, UCB Franklin,
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This is really fun. I can't believe I never did this. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, wait, we just started this podcast.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long have you been doing it?
Like 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah. So you're still among the early early guests.
Right.
We'll probably ask you to be back before our run is up.
Oh, you guys have you've already gotten canceled?
Yeah. Already canceled.
All right, I'll do the last episode.
That's okay. This is it.
You'll come back for our retrospective.
This is it. We're ending it with you. Well, there's one more person, Ian Roberts, who's been here the whole time.
Ian. Oh, come on in, Ian.
I just thought, you know.
Why didn't you tell me you were here?
I wouldn't tell you.
Well, that was it.
That was it. The great
Matt
Walsh.
That's the end of the interview. Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah. That's the end of our show.
And the end of our show.
Thanks for listening.
And yeah.
We'll see you next week with Brian Stack.
A
former late night writer who's beloved by fans and also now a writer on the Colbert Show.
Yes. No, he's a legend.
Yes.
And I think you'll really enjoy that too.
Yep.
I'm assuming that you enjoyed this week's. I probably shouldn't do that.
Very presumptuous, Jesse. Very presumptuous.
But yeah, tune in next week. And we like you.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blaird.
Associate producer, Jen Samples. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.